Absolutely, and that's why the meetings of CIOs or CDOs or CTOs, they are like AA meetings.
Yeah.
You basically share your complaints and share your practices and thoughts, but in the end, you collectively, the job is very similar around the world, whatever stage and maturity of your government you're at.
Welcome to this podcast created by the eEstonia Briefing Center. In this series, we invite some of the most influential people in politics and business to discuss all angles of digitalization in Estonia and the world, from past learnings to current challenges and future plans. So take a seat, pour yourself a glass of your favorite drink, and enjoy the art of digitalization. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of The Art of Digitalization. My name is Florian Marcus. I'm a digital transformation advisor at the eEstonia Briefing Center. And today I was able to snitch just around 1 hour time from arguably one of the most busy men in the Republic of Estonia. His name is Siim Sikkut and he is the Chief Information Officer of the Republic of Estonia and has been in that position since 2017. First of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And also thank you for hosting us in your office, actually, inside the ministry. So thank you very much. How are you today?
Ah, quite good. And really thanks for having me, of course, right? It's always a pleasure to approach the fans of eEstonia.
Yes, wherever you are around the world, whether you're sitting at home or taking a nice morning jog, it's nice to be with you. So we have a couple of subject focuses that we want to deal with today. We will talk a lot about DTFs. We will talk about other plans of Estonia in the sphere of digitalization, and also your personal takes on some of the developments around the world. Now I've just said the word DTF, and now the majority of our audience might wonder, WTF is a DTF? I guess first of all, the acronym stands for Digital Testbed Framework. But Siim, I will leave it to you to explain to us, what does it actually mean beyond those three words?
I think what's really famous around the world these days is an NTF, isn't it, right? So so we might be going into that business, right? No, joking there. The DTF, so what we are about to sort of launch the world in a way is to say that, look, if you have stuff that could make our digital government even better, come build it with us. So DTF stands for Digital Testbed Framework. Mm-hmm. What we have done and tried out over the last few years is basically a legal arrangement, the legal framework mm-hmm. that allows us to work with innovators from across the globe, work them in a way that it's like open innovation, as the buzzword goes. We provide you access to our government stack, the way that, you know, stuff is built on and so forth. You come to us with your new, your good idea, product, prototype, whatever, and build and develop on top of this. And so in the end, you might have a world-rocking product. We might have exactly something useful to add to our digital government setup, and everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. So when you say the sort of tech stack of Estonia, do we think about the UX or the design of a website? Do we think about how different government authorities are allowed to talk to each other? The X-Road source code already is open source on GitHub today. So how can we imagine what sort of stuff you would put out in the open?
It can be actually anything. I mean, in that sense, in some ways, even let's say if you have something that would contribute to our closed stack, well, exactly, you know, we'll let this talk as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just the things that we have pushed out there into code repository of mm-hmm. ours or whatever like that. So the point being, our government stack is literally all the tech that our government is built on, all the digital stuff that we have, right? So it can be data, it can be concrete applications, it can be the platforms like X-Road, like you say, whatever. We don't want to limit this. Basically, or it can be just even a complete new full service that you provide, right? So mm-hmm. as sort of just, you know, as an addition to the digital service portfolio that we have. So we on purpose kept it very open, just exactly to say, rather say, look, if you have something that would make digital services better here in Estonia, come talk to us.
So the expected benefits, I guess, are for the different providers and developers that they get to have this sort of solution that they are able to build on top of. And for Estonia, it would be to use the outcome of those developments for free afterwards. Or
so what we offer exactly is this innovation partnership. Mm-hmm. We will be your partner. In a good way, critical client as a first client, in terms for you to come and try your stuff out. It can be that, you know, you already have something, but you just really want to try it out in the world-class digital government setting, you know, in an actual live environment, right? Yeah. So that's the sort of partnership that we offer. In return, what we look for is exactly that, not for you to sell your stuff to us, but rather it's a partnership. So if we provide you then a playground, so to speak, or a test bed, then, you know, we would hope to get in return, if it works, exactly a good product to use and for free. And also what you get is that if it works out, look, we'll promote the hell out of you. So basically you get a reference that you can then take to other countries and so on. So that's the sort of win-win stuff we are after. It's not a theory. So we'd actually used it multiple times now with several sort of companies and with several products in Estonia here. And even in long days in the past, quite a few successful startups were born this way. So it's now we're just taking it to the world.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. If I want to take a cynical view on this, the Estonian taxpayer may say, wait a second, we've paid for the development of all of this stuff for the last 20, 30 years, and now you're offering all of this tech stack for free. So I guess you mentioned already that the one positive outcome of this is that we would, as Estonia, we would expect to use that solution afterwards, which is great. But also, would you expect that it leads to greater interoperability in the world? What other benefits are there beyond just sort of Estonia getting a nice solution at the end?
Well, in your question, I think there are two levels there. First of all, when it comes to a taxpayer, then the code we built up or commissioned and so forth has been in principle free anyway. Most of the stuff we've done has been there with an open source license, even if not immediately downloadable from a repo, then you ask, you get it, right? So
it is available.
It is exactly, it's meant to be available. And what we have done through the last year or so is that to literally make it not just available in principle, in theory, but in practice, right? That's the repos, that's the artifactories, that's that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. Because we do believe in open innovation in all ways. The second point is, how does it benefit the world? Well, first of all, look, quite frankly, if it's something that will be useful to the whole wide world, right, then obviously there's a market there. And so if we've managed to, you know, help out an innovation like that to be born, awesome, right? Yeah. So I'm a very simplistic argument in that sense, but we've seen many times in Estonia as well, X-Road going to the world or whatever. And second point being that, but look, at the end of the day, I'll be very selfish and honest here. We are out here to build the best and make our best digital government even better. So that's the number one thing. If in the end the world benefits, it's a nice spillover.
I think we already see today with some of the solutions that work perfectly fine in Estonia that also Estonians benefit if it is interoperable with other countries, whether I'm thinking about the data exchange that already works with Finland or the e-prescription that is being built up in Germany in cooperation with an Estonian company and so on. So all of this stuff, you know, it's not just a zero-sum game where one side loses and one side wins. There are win-wins available for sure. I want to sort of draw an analogy to something that we experienced with the e-residency program. With the e-residency program, which enables people around the world to create a company and, you know, sort of through Estonia and run it online, the expectation at the start was that primarily big non-EU countries would be interested in this. And the actual outcome, if we look at the numbers today, is that, yes, of course, like China, Japan, and so on are massively interested in this, but the most EU residents come from Finland. The second most companies are created by Germans, so those are EU countries. Who are the expected cooperation partners for the digital testbed framework, and who might be the sort of surprise players that could pop up? Do you think that the sort of DTF landscape opens up cooperation between governments as well? What do you think where this could go?
Well, would be surprised if actually other governments come to us like that. But no, I mean, that would be a sort of nice way anyways, because, well, government to government, there's collaboration, sharing and things happening anyway, right? Whether it's in these networks like Digital Nations or elsewhere. We don't have a geographic target in mind, because I think, first of all, digital government is a global game. And and that innovators community is a global one. Whom we are, I think, most sort of often looking to tap into is the GovTech and the sort of community, growing GovTech community globally, right? So the startups, scale-ups, these guys who do products or back-end stuff really aimed for the B2B stuff and the government stuff like that, right? Who perhaps have not considered Estonia as a sort of market yet and so on. We would, but just like you mentioned e-residency, well, we see this whole digital testbed framework launched now as also a bit of experiment. So experiment to see, look, I mean, does it actually get traction? So, I mean, is that actually something that in that in it that interested companies from around the world? Basically, we declare that we are open for, you know, innovation and your business. So exactly, you know, come, let's do stuff together. It's for us like the next step in this long way that we've been working with the Estonian industry for a long time. We still have awesome partnership with the Estonian IT industry, but obviously we want to extend this because good solutions can come from anywhere. So for us, it's the next step in the journey of exactly trying new things out and keep building and iterating our government like that. So we are open for anyone.
So to all of our listeners who are working in the GovTech sector or startups more widely, you are cordially invited to cooperate with.
And if big corporations want to come to us as well, no closed doors.
Absolutely, open for business. Something that I guess at least the sort of less tech savvy people might wonder is, if we open up all of that tech stack, does that make us more vulnerable from a security standpoint, or is it basically just sort of the design, the service journey and so on that we open up there?
Well, first of all, it's all the stuff that's sensitive is not in the game anyway, right? So basically, but what we have, how our government works is that, you know, the stuff that we need to really keep close guarded is a fraction of the big picture of things, right? Secondly, why do we have this approach? Is that what we have clearly seen is that working in the open actually makes us more secure. The fact that, let's take again X-Road, for example, or Identity, you know, our core platforms that our whole country, not only government, are running upon these days. They are built on open standards, open solutions like that. Why? Because if it's closed, there's only so much of a community, so much of brain and talent and skills that goes into making this better. If it's open, potentially you could be exactly having the whole sort of wider global developer community behind. So we've seen in essence how a few times having this openness has brought out vulnerabilities we would not have known otherwise. And that's awesome.
Yeah. The more people have an actual stake in a technology, the more eyes you have on it, and the more.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in the end, it's in many ways coming up with new solutions is a talent game.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
And the digital testbed framework is an example of that. So to say that, look, if you have GovTech talent, we might as well talk.
Is Estonia the first country in the world that does this? Are you aware of any other countries that are going in the same direction?
To be honest, I might just have gaps in my knowledge in that sense. So at least I have not heard. So this sort of testbed frameworks, I mean, having an actually special framework for encouraging partnerships might be a bit sort of novel in that sense. There are countries who've done sandboxes in a regulatory sense, you know, just inviting like sectoral innovation in financials.
Play around in a certain area.
Exactly. But that's a bit different because that's saying that, look, I mean, you know, come build your product in our market, but not in a partnership with our government. So basically, exactly us, sort of, you know, as your core partner like that. Obviously, this happens in vendor relationship. Obviously, there's like research collaborations happening. Obviously, sometimes corporations go to governments and these things are born like that. But like, I believe it might be one of the first, cases of this approach at a systemic open innovation effort like that. But then again, I wouldn't claim the title because I may not know.
Let's say one of the first, one of the early adopters. I think there's a very exciting future for these sort of testbed frameworks and approaches. So we'll see where it goes, but I'm sure it's going to be exciting for Estonia. moving on to what's more sort of general digitalization topics. To some people, it might feel like over the last 5 years or so, there has not been a lot of sort of digital revolutionary work from Estonia. If we think back to i-voting, that was back in 2005. It's been more than 1.5 decades by now. This was something that I would argue even today still captivates minds. Like if you explain to them, you can vote from the beach or from the sofa or wherever you are, and around the clock as well. E-residency is another example. But since then, it's been comparably quiet, at least sort of on the public front. Is that fair? Or would you say that, you could also say it is fair, but there is a lot of stuff that has to be done behind the scenes in order to set up the next steps. So like, what do you think is the situation of innovation in Estonia?
Well, you mean specifically in digital government?
Yes, correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I think this lingering myth about sort of, you know, stalling of the tiger or stalling of the innovation has been going on for 15 or 20 years now. I think ever since we started, that was appetite. But hey, where's the next thing again?
It's broken, you know, record.
If not every day a new sort of disruption pops up, you know, we are somehow losing pace. But look, the longest journey story is this, that in Estonia, we reached quite early a point where all the sort of low-hanging fruits were picked when it comes to digitization. And this is not the case in many countries around the world, unfortunately, yet, right? Okay. So they are still turning paper process into a digital one and you know, figuring out the first steps in some domains.
Digital identities and so on.
For example, digital identity is not even there yet, et cetera. Correct. So my point being that for us, digital services, digital solutions have to be iterated and improved all the time. Otherwise, they become legacy, they are too cumbersome to use, they become insecure, so forth. But that's something that I guess users really don't grasp that much. I mean, it's a next upgrade, essentially, right? Yeah. It's something that, you know, that happens in our phones all the time. Do we consider the next Android version a massive innovation? Yeah. Well, we don't, but actually it is an innovation because it's something that's improved. So this is the stage where we are at, that, you know, a lot of stuff happens daily, but it's the iteration, it's the improvement upon what the stack we built up so far. When it comes to new, bigger jumps, we just launched yesterday, actually, a new national digital agenda for or the draft digital agenda for the country. And we have been working on some things that I would claim, obviously I'm subjective, but as a government CEO, I would claim can be the next complete new levels in terms of the experience and how our digital government works. And that I'm very optimistic that will be the sort of next leaps to talk about. But first of all the stuff we have been doing to make services happen proactively around life events, we are now really building them out, not just talking about them anymore. The whole plan we have in experimentation phase and going to like a build out phase around Crat AI, which is then making our government, all of our government accessible in the future through virtual assistants like that. That will be a big game changer that nobody's tried in the world. So basically quite a few things are cooking up that I'm hopeful sort of will counter the myth quite soon.
I think there are, it's actually, to me personally, it's quite encouraging that people in Estonia are so blasé, so almost negative about this, because it means that they've gotten used to an incredibly high standard of e-government that we have in Estonia.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I always, as a government CEO, I also always have seen it as a good thing, just like you point out, because that's one of the reasons I don't that much believe in global and countrywide indexes or comparisons and that much, right? And without trying to sound arrogant, I think the benchmark should be our potential, not what other countries next to us are up to. Because in the end also, yes, there is some competition between the countries, but you know, there's more even collaboration happening. So basically for us the challenge is how to be the best version of ourselves as opposed to are we better than the neighbor next door.
Thanks to my job, I've had the pleasure of looking at plenty of these rankings. And I must say that some of the metrics are, with the best will in the world, a bit misleading. One of the things that I feel are very notably absent is usage rates of online services. So like, there might be a ranking of how many services do you have. There's a question, are more services better? Like if you have a wider variety rather than having one simplified version where it's just a sort of one service journey, there are so many different discussions about this that these indices don't really can't really grasp, I guess.
What's been interesting for me to see is that that the rankings, I mean, it's very hard, objectively very hard to capture the impact of things, just like you point out, right? So usage is one aspect of that. Impact and, for example, satisfaction rates, you know, so the quality of the services in that sense is harder to capture in a comparable way across the world. That's why they resort back to, you know, the stuff that they can measure and compare.
Yeah.
But my point being, but what we have seen through e-Estonia Briefing Center through the years, for example, and many of the listeners here who've been through the Briefing Center previous showroom, there you grasp sort of that it's not just that somehow Estonia has managed to use technology, but the impact it has brought to daily life of a citizen, of an entrepreneur, of a government official. It's completely penetrated our lives. And that impact, even if it's not measured by, that's been our differentiator.
Mm-hmm. I can say as a German, having lived here for almost 6 years now, my life quality is a lot higher than that of my friends back in Germany. Quite simply,
even
because,
with our weather.
I was thinking about making this introduction. Actually, it's a beautiful afternoon in May, and we already had snow this morning and sleet over the last few hours. So, a beautiful country to be.
That's why we do things digitally, because weather is so lousy, right?
You do not want to go outside. So the life quality is just so much higher in some ways, because you can do whatever you have to do with the government, all of the different dealings, in sort of maybe 20 minutes max per year, you know, and that's the end of the story. And this is just something that you don't really get from other countries, and it's something that's really hard to measure. If you would ask Estonians, are they happy in life? Well, I mean, you do have these worldwide satisfaction surveys, and Estonians don't really rank very highly. Is it because they're not super happy, or is it because they just express their emotions a slightly bit differently? That is very much up for debate. Again, another thing that's very hard to quantify. But I'm sure that digitalization does have effects on that. I can confirm that from my personal impressions.
What we have also seen is that all the Estonians, I mean, just like you, Florian, brought out, you know, you have experience coming here physically to from another country. But all of us Estonians who've done at least some time abroad, study, work, whatever, also start to appreciate this. But look, this becomes too much of a bragging in a way. So I think sort of clearly Estonia is not the only country like that who extensively relies on digital tools and technology.
And that's a good thing. Let's be clear.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But my point is that so what we exactly tend to underappreciate, and I think that's the moral of our chat here, is to say that, I mean, in Estonia, life without digital is not an option anymore. Mm-hmm. So we reached that sort of point, and so even if the next upgrade doesn't seem too big of an innovation, it's still actually the next step in this longer journey like that.
Yeah. You can't invent a new WhatsApp every week, but you will be happy if it gets the security updates, gets more user friendly, and so on over time. And we don't complain about that in the personal sphere.
But exactly. But still, this takes us back to the digital test bed framework as well. So we don't want to be. We are very conscious that, look, we will not be, as a government especially, the ones who come up with all the great innovation ideas, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we have to be open to them. So that's why we work with our industry. That's why we want to work with, you know, invite the innovators from around the world to basically come to us with their ideas, solutions, stuff like that, because that can then perhaps not only make the current government's service perhaps better as the next iteration, but perhaps add something that's completely then new. So that's a way to basically counter this or add to the portfolio of constant upgrade something much newer as well. It's a tactic for that.
Exciting stuff. And I think we could talk about this for hours, but I do have one last question for you. And this sort of refers to your role as a CIO. What is the most pleasant part about your job? What do you think is the most rewarding for you? And what is maybe the toughest part of your daily work?
Well, you mean outside doing the podcast, right?
I hope you mean that this is the most rewarding part of your work. I'm sure what you mean.
No, that's exactly
100%,
what I meant.
Great. Yeah.
No, the most rewarding stuff is obviously, as the same in any job, if the plan comes together. If basically we've, as a team, we've tried to start something, it actually gets traction, and we believe a lot in experimentation. We believe a lot in trying out stuff, which means that sometimes you fail, everything doesn't work out the same way.
Not being afraid of failing either.
And we are not at all afraid of failing. So basically, but if experiments work, it's a very sweet spot.
Yeah.
So I mentioned before the #CratAI program of ours. This was a wild hypothesis we started playing with as an idea that, hey, but can the government be accessible through something like a Siri in your phone, right? So, or Google Assistant or something in your car or fridge, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now we see through experimental work, but hey, actually, it can be done.
There's
a use case there. It can be technologically done, even if it's hard. So these are the sweetest moments that you just sort of see that, hey, actually what you're trying to do works out and brings value to the people here. What's the toughest part? I guess the toughest part is that at the end of the day, a lot of the job is this tedious nitty-gritty pushing of the government forward, right?
Yeah.
That's the job of all innovators. That's the job of all government CIOs, to basically make the machinery of government daily better with small nudges, small improvements that the service owners, you know, would upgrade the services, that, you know, all the security guys do their part of the work. So long story short, it's this a lot of routine small things you need to do daily, because that's what keeps the operation going. And then the rewarding stuff is exactly the sort of, you know, innovation stuff on top of this. But in your role as a CIO, you have to work with both. You can't just be one or another.
I guess CIOs around the world might be dreaming that the entire Estonian government machine is exactly as agile as the CIO of the country. But I think it's fair to say that regardless of how agile the base organization is, the CIO always has to be the sort of big thinker and the big strategic developer. So regardless of what organization you work in, you will always be the one who... yeah, sort of has to push this big rock up the mountain, but it's a very rewarding thing.
Absolutely, and that's why the meetings of CIOs or CDOs or CTOs or however they are called in
all
the country, all of them, they are like AA meetings.
Yeah.
You basically, exactly, share your complaints and share your practices and thoughts, but in the end, you collectively, the job is very similar around the world. Whatever stage and maturity of your government you're at, there's always the job about sort of, you know, constantly iterating what has been built up so far, and then as part of the portfolio, trying out complete new stuff. You have to balance these.
Absolutely. Siim, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It was a very, very pleasant conversation. Thank you also to the dear listeners at home for listening. And please stay tuned for our next edition and next episode of this podcast. But for now, thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Siim, for having us here.
Thank you. And always welcome to eEstonia.
And that's the end of yet another thought-provoking conversation about the art of digitalization. In the meantime, make sure to stay connected with eEstonia on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also check out our website e-estonia.com to learn more about digitalization in this beautiful country and other upcoming events. For now, that is all from our side. Stay tuned for our next podcast episode, and have a great day. The number.